Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Growing up, our next guest was, when she was being mischievous or cranky or just needed a bit of inspiration, her mother would tell her this, quote, "Always remember you are a Madison. You come from African slaves and a president." Dr. Betty Kearse is a retired pediatrician and a geneticist. Betty's ancestors were enslaved and freed. They worked on plantations as high school principals and even in the White House. And many of their names and stories had been forgotten to history, but not within her family. Betty has continued the African tradition of oral history, only now she's committed her family's stories to the written word in a new book called The Other Madisons, The Lost History of a President's Black Family. The Other Madisons is set to publish on March 24th, and you can buy her books, of course, through your local bookseller. Many are taking orders online, which is a good thing to do for stores and authors in this moment. And Dr. Betty Kearse joins me now from New Mexico. Welcome to All of It.
Thank you, Allison.
May I call you Betty?
Yes, please.
Okay. That saying in your family, always remember you're a Madison. You come from African slaves and a president. When was the first time, Betty, you remember that phrase really sinking in?
Well, the first time I remember hearing it, I was about 5 years old. And not necessarily misbehaving, but not standing still as my mother was making dresses for me. So she was trying to redirect me and calm me down. But, you know, the stories continued throughout my life. And to say when I actually started thinking about it and trying to understand what this history meant, what that saying that you just repeated really meant, it took me a number of years. It took some thinking and some growing up.
How did it influence your life, this information?
Oh, well, greatly. That saying, always remember you're a Madison, you come from African slaves, and a president was really something to live up to. And it has about a 200-year history and has guided all the members of my family for those 200 years. So for me, the expectations were, you know, pretty clear.
In your book, you describe your search for information, and it's interspersed with descriptive passages about Mandy. I'm going to let you explain to my audience who Mandy is.
Mandy was my family's first African ancestor in America, and she was our first griot, which means she was our first oral historian following that ancient tradition of griots and griots, again in West Africa at least 2,000 years ago. So Mandy was captured off the coast of Ghana and ended up in Virginia on President Madison's father's plantation on what is now Montpelier. And so we think of her as the mother of our family.
My guest is Betty Kearse. Dr. Betty Kearse. The name of her book is The Other Madisons, The Lost History of a President's Black Family. I want to read a bit from your book. You write about your grandfather and this saying, and something that's very important to mention, that how proud he was of both sides of your family. You write, "No one believed in the family saying more than Gramps. No one was proud of his ancestors, black and white. He was as proud that Mandy had survived the Middle Passage as he was that President Madison had helped found our nation. Without Mandy, we would not have our strength. Without Madison, he said, we would not have our name." Time and again, Gramps told his children that America, conceived by Madison and the other founding fathers, would never have become what it is without the millions of slaves like Mandy who worked its soil. He taught my mother and her brothers to recite these words. Our white ancestors laid the foundations for this country, but our dark-skinned ancestors built it. They worked the fields, nursed babies, preached sermons, and fought in wars. They played music, owned businesses, cured sickness, and worked on railroads. They taught their children everything important about life in this world. They taught their children about God.
Yes.
That's such a moving words. Your grandfather just sounds like he was a tremendous human, first of all.
Yes. Yes, my gramps was a tremendous human. He had a great sense of humor, but also a great sense of history and a great commitment to history.
As your whole family did, and you describe in your book your mother bringing you this box of family documents and told you were going to be the new family griot. She told you, I want to give you plenty of time to write the book.
Yes.
Why do you think she said that to you?
Well, my mother didn't write down anything. She told the stories that had been passed down to her through the generations. For her, it was through seven generations. But no one recorded anything. And I think she became concerned that this, even though we were very careful to continue to pass the stories down orally, that somehow those stories might get lost unless they were recorded. So what she intended for me was to document the stories, to write down the stories that had been told orally, as well as preserving these all the items that were in the box. And, this was the age of the computers and the internet, and she had no familiarity with that at all. I mean, she was aware of them, but she never touched a computer. And so she felt that times were changing. It was time to write this down. It's time to use new means of communication that were becoming available. But what she meant for me to write was just to document the stories. But as I wrote, I found there was just so much more in there, not talking about just my own family, but the descendants of the millions of slaves who helped build this country.
As you were doing your research, Betty, were you able to find documentation of Mandy, and were you able to find documentation of the connection to Madison?
No. There's a number of reasons. I certainly did try. Mm-hmm. One of the biggest problems is that slaves often were not identified as individual people within documents. Another problem was that slave families were often separated and sold apart. So it was, you could find one or two here and there, but it was hard to find a track back in time. So no, I did not find Mandy, although I feel in a way I did, in sort of a spiritual way, as I say towards the end of the book, when I went to the slave cemetery at Montpelier and felt that I had found her there. But as far as archival connections, I did not find her. It came, or her, or Corrine, or Jim. But, I'm coming close, and my cousins and I are still looking for links.
Well, I think that's part of African-American tradition, is it is handed down orally. Things were also not written down. You were told by your parents and your parents and your parents' parents.
Right.
Would you explain to my audience the connection back to James Madison for your family? Who he is to you?
Well, he is my great, 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 four greats, grandfather. And according to the stories that have passed down through the generations, he had a relationship with an enslaved cook whose name was Corrine. And it's particularly interesting that Corrine was his half-sister, because his father had a relationship with Mandy, who was Corrine's mother. Is that clear?
That is clear.
Okay.
It's clear.
Okay.
I figured you could say it more clearly than I could say it. There, you know, and there's interesting, you the word relationship, because you, in your book, go back and forth with your mom about the sexual advances, some say sexual assault. I'm going to let you use the language you want to use. But your mom's response was about the elder Madison, you shouldn't think ill of the Madisons. That's just the way it was back then.
Yeah.
Why do you think your mother had that position? And what are your personal feelings about James Madison and the interaction with Corrine and his father and the interaction with Mandy?
Right. Well, for one thing, my mother was right. That is the way things were back then. But that doesn't help me. For me, it was wrong, and they knew it was wrong. Mm-hmm. And it's particularly for the president, who wrote a number of times in many documents, public and personal, private, that he thought slavery was wrong. He called it a sad blot on our country. So he knew it was wrong, but I don't know if I want to call it a personal weakness, or as my mother would had said to me, that he needed to prove himself that he was a man. I don't know, but I just can't get over the feeling that he knew it was wrong. You know, no matter what other people are doing around him, he knew it was wrong. And he did it for whatever reason he had.
My guest is Dr. Betty Kearse. The name of her book is The Other Madisons, The Lost History of a President's Black Family. For as much somewhat admiration that your family, your mother had for James Madison, or your other family members as well, and that idea that you were from the Madisons, didn't feel that way about Dolly Madison, though.
I'm sorry.
It did not sound like your mom did cared for Dolly Madison much.
Oh, no. Right. No. She is responsible for Jim getting sold away. She sold him herself. And so because of her...
And Jim is the child with James Madison and Corrine.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Yes. So if she had not sold him, we would have... would not have lost that connection.
At one point in the book and your research, it was very hard. You couldn't find Jim, but you found someone that possibly could have been Jim.
Yes, Shadrach. Yes.
Shadrach. And explain who Shadrach. That's such an interesting turn of events in the book.
Well, as my cousins and I were looking for any Madisons, during that period, one of my cousins, Sean Harley, found 1830 slave, was a census, not a slave census, 1830 census, describing a free black man whose name was Shadrach Madison. And Shadrach was born in 1792, which was around when we believe Jim was born. He was born in Virginia. And his name is sort of unique. Shadrach is not that common in the Montpelier, Virginia, greater Virginia area. But the documents, or let's say listings of slaves at Montpelier, include a man named Shadrach. Now that Shadrach would have been older than the free Shadrach, but because that they were born, Jim and Shadrach were born around the same time in the same area, and they had this unique name in common, we sort of thought that maybe our Jim was actually named after the Shadrach who's documented in the records at Montpelier.
So, Betty, I've been to Montpelier. and made the trek with my son. And I remember at one point in the tour, they start talking about Paul Jennings, who was with Madison until his death, was his servant till his death.
Yes.
And I kind of, I piped up and said, any chance he's related to Mr. Madison? And I got some hard side eye. I just went.
I don't know when you went, but the staff at Montpelier today is really committed to understanding the whole story.
That was my question to you. Compare it over the period of time from when you started researching this book to now, what was it like to visit Montpelier coming with what your mission was?
They have always been receptive and supportive and have included me in anything that involves the slaves. And I don't know when you were there as a visitor, but in summer of 2017, they opened a permanent exhibit called A Mere Distinction of Color, which is a quote from Madison. And it's about the slaves and the role they played at Montpelier, and not just at Montpelier, but in the nation at large, because they talk about the Constitution and how slaves are addressed in the Constitution, how slaves and slavery, without saying slaves or slavery, how they are managed in the Constitution. And so it's also emphasized that without the hundreds of slaves that Madison had, he would not have had the opportunity to go to college and to study law. Well, he was not a lawyer, but he studied constitutions and different kinds of legal documents having to do with governing. But he was able to have, not leisure time, but time to study. And if he had not had those slaves out there doing all the things that were necessary to be done to maintain a plantation and to garner some wealth, you know, it just wouldn't have happened. And who knows what would have happened to us today? Who knows what kind of constitution, if we had a constitution?
That's so interesting. That was 2017. I'm curious, bigger picture, you know, at Monticello, there's been a real sense of telling the fuller story and the bigger picture regarding Thomas Jefferson and Sally Hemings. Mm-hmm. What do you think's going on sort of culturally right now that there is this sort of awakening about the bigger picture with these founding fathers?
That's a good word, too. Yeah, that's a good word. It is an awakening. It's an awakening to something that's always been there, but I think I'm not sure why now. You know, we are well past the era of the Civil Rights Movement, the Black Power Movement, and, you know, all these great social movements of the 60s. So I'm not sure why now. I can't say that it was even because we had our first Black president, because when I went to Montpelier the first time, it was in 1992. And already they were receptive, and already they were beginning to look at the role that slaves had played on the plantation and in Madison's life. And to me, I'm speaking only from my point of view, as a frequent visitor to Montpelier for over quite a few years, it feels to me like some of the other former plantations in the area, including Monticello, are beginning to follow Montpelier's lead. Now, as again, I said, this is my point of view, having gone to Montpelier a number of times. I have been to Monticello, once, and I just did not have the same feeling. Mm-hmm. The Mulberry Row, I believe it's called, where Monticello, where the slaves worked and lived, sort of felt like it's on the side. You know, it's...
Right, it's down that hill. It is off to the
right.
side.
Yeah, it is kind of... But when you go to Montpelier, it feels like the slaves were more present in the lives of the Madisons. The kitchen, which is where this exhibit I mentioned, A Mere Distinction of Color, that's where it's located, the focus of it is located. And because this is part of the house, it's the physical part of the house, and so they're physically part of the Madisons' lives. The cabins, at least for the house servants, are just, you know, maybe 75 or 100 yards away from, away from the mansion itself.
It's definitely, I think it's worth the road trip myself. I think it's a really interesting, I mean, everybody goes to Mount Vernon and to Monticello, but I think Montpelier is an incredibly interesting trip for people who love mm-hmm. history.
Yes. Yes. And when you go into there, part of the tour includes going into different rooms, but they have sort of two-dimensional figures of slaves being present, for example, serving in the dining room. So that, you know, so they're there, they're physically visible, or representations are physically visible. So you don't forget that this happened, you know, through the labor of the slaves.
Well, it's written down now, so no one can forget it. The name of the book is The Other Madisons, The Lost History of a President's Black Family, Dr. Betty Kearse. Thank you so much for making the time today.
Oh, thank you, Allison. Thank you for having me on.